And we are back. I'm Patty Walden, the host of Your Health Connection on WCLK 91.9 FM. We are talking tonight about brain cancer, how you survive it, what's the diagnosis, what is it? We are here with Beth Jordan, who's a brain cancer survivor, Dr. Shoma, and we have recently been joined by Dr. Erin Dunbar. Dr. Dunbar, welcome to the conversation.
And thank you.
For those of you listening out there, you can certainly call us with your questions. We are taking your questions live. You can reach us at 404-880-9255. That's 404-880-9255. Dr. Dunbar, tell us a little bit about yourself. You are with Piedmont, is that right?
Yes, thank you for the invitation to be here today.
Thank you for being here.
I direct the neuro-oncology program at the Piedmont Brain Tumor Center. And I've been trained in internal medicine, medical oncology, neuro-oncology, and hospice and palliative care. And I draw upon all those trainings to be able to take the best possible care of patients. And all of us that take care of patients with brain tumors have a portfolio of treatments, and I'd be happy to describe a little bit about them.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure our listeners want to hear.
So Dr. Sengupta and I, among many others, we think of treatment in two different basic ways. One is, what are we doing to slow down the growth of the tumor? So I affectionately call that tumor-directed therapy. But equally important is symptom-directed therapy. And I know that Dr. Sengupta and Ms. Jordan were talking about seizures and headaches and other symptoms that are equally important to treat to help someone's health status be well enough to get treatment and be well enough to want the different treatments. And the treatments come in different modalities. They can come in the form of surgery, and surgery can be done to remove tumor or to take tumor out and interrogate it. It can come in the form of radiation, and radiation has many different shapes and sizes. A third modality are medicines, and there are many different types of mechanisms of therapy, and I know each one of us are going to share more about those. And then more recently, there's a fourth modality, which is device therapy using energy waves to perturb tumor cells. So the tools that brain tumor specialists have to treat tumors is expanding.
Excellent. Beth, did you experience any of those specific therapies that Dr. Dunbar just mentioned?
Definitely the first three. I've not tried the fourth one, the new one with electromagnetic mm-hmm. fields. It's very exciting. I have friends that have done it. For me, I pushed hard into the clinical trial space, okay. You know, with different drugs and really pursuing immunotherapy or vaccine therapy.
Okay.
Looking for a long-term solution.
Can a tumor be left and someone still live? I mean, can you treat it without removing it? Dr. Shoma?
Okay, so a tumor like a glioblastoma, the best way to sort of draw an analogy to it is like cutting a tree in a forest. You still have the root system there, even though you can't see what's going on. So a very good surgeon, as long as it's in a strategically located place in the brain, can take out as much as they can see by eye. But there are rootlets or tendrils that penetrate the brain tissue, which need to be tackled. Then the next arsenal comes along in the form of radiation. And there are lots of modalities of radiation that can be applied in the adult world and in the pediatric realm of brain tumors. And where these Emory and Winship are actually developing a proton beam center that has been very effective in the pediatric realm and in cases where brain tumors go into the spinal cord too. So you have that aspect. And then there are what are called the standard classic chemotherapies that target DNA, that is the cell makeup, the genetic code, or there are things that attack parts of the cell and cell membrane, or you can have therapies that are designed against specific receptors on the cell. So these are like portals that let molecules into the cell or compounds into the cell, and these can be in the form of what are called checkpoint inhibitors or molecules that target mutations, that some cancers have, including the brain cancers, or you could have immune system modulators, because our immune system plays a huge role in how the brain navigates cancer. And Dr. Dunbar and I have a lot of experience in dealing with these sort of scenarios.
You mentioned, go ahead, Dr. Dunbar.
I'd like to add to what was said in the sense that we think of each of these treatments that were just described as trying to fit the individual patient. Each individual patient's tumor is different. And the goal is, how closely can we approximate the next best treatment with each patient? And sometimes they come in the form of routine therapy, things we can take off the shelf. Mm-hmm. But other times they come in the form of clinical trials, such as Mrs. Jordan was describing. And I'd like to describe a little bit about clinical trials, because there is a lot that is known about trials by patients, family members in the community, but there's a lot that's unique to the brain tumor experience. So in broad strokes, clinical trials come in several different phases. They also come in several different types. So types might be defined as participating in a tumor registry or being part of a database. It might be allowing some of your tissue to be used by science to learn more for the help of others. Or it might be tissue or treatments that are designed to potentially help that individual. So that would be such a treatment we would call a therapeutic clinical trial. And the phases can either be preclinical, which are situations where we are testing a particular medicine, potentially giving it to a patient before surgery, and then seeing if the marker or the drug got to the tumor by the time of surgery. But that in of itself wouldn't be a therapy. Or we have phases of therapy trials, such as phase one, that's asking, is this drug or is this treatment safe? First in brain tumor, first in this tumor type. So it's very specific to learning about safety. And then if a therapy is promising in that arena and found to be sufficiently safe, the next phase of trials are, does it work? Phase two. So that's, is there any clinical benefit found? And if so, how can you approximate and how can you optimize how well that works? And the third phase is, we know enough about its safety and how well it works to want to be able to give it to more people. But then you're fine-tuning that drug further, such as, does drug A work as well as the study drug B? After things are FDA approved, there are typically post-marketing phase four studies where we're still learning additional safety and benefit features about the drug. So when patients come to brain tumor specialists and want to be part of a trial, we want to not only find the right therapy, the right mechanism, but help them fit what phase trial fits their needs.
Sure. That's good stuff. You're listening live to Your Health Connection on WCLK 91.9 FM. Our phone number is 404-880-9255. We are taking your calls live. Give us a call. We've got some great guests here. Experts, survivors, whatever your question is, if you've thought about, I've got these symptoms and they might sound similar to what Beth has gone through, give us a call and just ask. We might have answers for you, or at least resources. Dr. Dunbar, you mentioned preclinical trials are, and I appreciate that you're saying that some of these are tailored to fit that person or the people. Are these trials done in groups in an effort to better measure, at the same time to have a larger numbered measurement for future, for to go from pre to clinicals to after?
Sure. So a clinical trial can come about from a variety of ways. It can come through the National Cancer Institute. It can come from specific institutions like Emory-Winship Cancer Center or Piedmont Brain Tumor Center. Mm-hmm. It can come from physicians that are investigators. We also have groups of scientists and medical specialists who have associations and collaborations, and so clinical trials can come from those. And each of those bodies, so to speak, organize trials to ask specific questions. So sometimes research institutions are very well suited to do preclinical studies testing tissue. And then other sites that serve a large volume of patients may be more interested in giving a later phase study to more people. So they come in all different shapes and sizes.
Okay.
And I want to draw a little bit about the tissue. As we go forward in someone's care, their tumor markers, the molecular genetics, or the mutational status of patients' tumors may change. And so reinterrogating or re-biopsying, recollecting tissue is becoming increasingly important. So to what Beth was describing, and there are certain trials that sometimes you can only get in if your tumor has that unique aberration. And sometimes it's to fit a specific drug.
Interesting. Well, let me ask this to both Dr. Shoma and Dr. Dunbar, because you mention adult and children. Is there a greater survivorship rate amongst children with brain cancer than there is adult?
Children tend to do better on the whole because the treatments offered are much more aggressive up front. But that is with a lot of consequences. And as Dr. Dunbar mentioned, brain cancers are, like other cancers in the body, are not a uniform collection of cells. They're like groups of islands, really. So if you eliminate one island, you might have another island colonize and take over. You eliminate that island and something else pops up. It's really an ongoing battle, and it's one where we have to constantly make strides forward. And so with the WINSHIP phase one unit, for example, it's actually extremely beneficial, as Dr. Dunbar said, to try things initially and then expand the studies. And so clinical trials that are offered often involve a number of centers. And the thing that individuals should realize is that it's not only the physician that should take ownership of that, it's also the individual who has the cancer, because they can go into clinicaltrials.gov and look up to see what trials are out there, and also discuss with other survivors, other individuals who are suffering the same thing, to get information. It's amazing what you learn from each other, and I'm always amazed at what I learn from my patients.
Thank you. You talked about taking ownership. Beth, I want to know from you, what are some of the things that you did? How did you change your lifestyle, or how did this diagnosis change the way that you live moving forward?
Drastically. And when I'm going to kind of jump in where we left off on the clinical trial things, and you said something about taking ownership of your health care. I think that's one of the first things that I did. Mm-hmm. I think being raised here in the South, I always thought that your doctor, you just went in and you didn't really engage in the process. You sort of did what the doctor said.
Right.
And I found that it's true. You really, as I got to know other patients, I was able to ask them, you know, what did you do? Have you heard of this drug? You know, what is a clinical trial? And I guess I had a very negative connotation of a clinical trial.
Sure.
And then I became reassured that you actually, I think, get better care when you're in a clinical trial. You kind of are watched like a hawk. You get a separate phone number for a separate nurse that they want to know if you have a rash, if your stomach hurts, if you have any symptom. They're monitoring you so closely. So I found clinical trials to be an excellent thing for me. I found that I had to research, you know, that it helped when I went to the doctor and had questions.
Sure.
You know, what is this an option for me at this center? And I've found that my doctors have been wonderful in evaluating clinical trials that I'm interested in. Often they'll throw in others, and together we'll look at some options. I've found that lifestyle changed drastically. I used to think that peanut butter and crackers was a meal. And if I didn't have peanut butter and crackers, then it was cheese and crackers. And I loved vegetables. I was raised on vegetables, but just didn't make time for it. And interestingly enough, prior to getting brain cancer, I was having a lot of little problems that all turned out to be kind of what I'll say chinks in my immune system, you know, just like little skin rash, what do you call it, eczema, hair falling out, you know, brittle nails, just little things.
Sure.
That I think, looking back, were probably indicative of a poor, weak immune system. And after being diagnosed with brain cancer, I dug into anything and everything that I could that was a good option. And it turns out that I think food matters. And what you put in is, you know, I kind of went to a vegan diet.
Okay.
And it wasn't truly vegan. It was more what I'd call an anti-cancer diet, but really plant-based. I would still eat some meat, some fish, but the, you know, broccoli was number one on my list, broccoli and kale and all that good stuff. And I think this allowed me to stay healthy through the entire treatment, to take all the chemo that I needed to take, to, you know, endure the radiation and just keep my body strong.
Excellent. 404-880-9255 is our phone number. You can tweet us live at CCRTD. Dr. Dunbar, how important is it for the patient to be that involved? And do doctors appreciate that the patients are doing their own research and coming to you and asking you questions? Is that something you want people to do?
Absolutely. We are humbled to be walking that journey with our patients, but it is their life, their body. An analogy I use often is saying that we begin writing a novel together, albeit a novel we didn't want to open and start together, but we become then players in that novel. And we want each individual patient to write their longest, most beautiful novel. And it's unique to each individual. And so if each treatment was a chapter, we want as many pages in every chapter, as many chapters as we can have, be smart and facile about when to change chapters, and always have lots of treatment options that become the new chapters. But the binder of that novel is people's health and well-being, their quality of life, and their safety. So we want people to be well enough to get lots of treatments and be well enough to want the different treatments. So to Beth's point, an immune system is one example of patients taking ownership, even if they're not part of a therapy that involves immune modulation or immune therapy. Patients that have good mind-body wellness, get good restorative sleep, eat for nutrition, stay hydrated, stress reduction through prayer and energy and activity, those are natural ways patients can empower themselves, boost their immune system, and enhance their not only their benefit of treatment, but their safety and tolerance of treatment. So that empowerment and that ownership is very valued in the physician-patient relationship.
Great advice, Dr. Dunbar. We are going to take a quick break, and you are listening live. Prepare your questions and give us a call during the break. We've got some wonderful, wonderful folks here. So we'll be right back.
Is your annual inspection past due? Regular checkups by your doctor are the key to finding health problems early. One in six men will get prostate cancer. If you have a father or a brother who has had it, your chances of getting the disease are even greater. If you are a man over the age of 50, schedule your appointment today. Discuss whether testing for prostate cancer is right for you. This message is brought to you by the Center for Cancer Research and Therapeutic Development at Clark Atlanta University and WCLK.